This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Number two of the Rob Brown Show starts now. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Fan Upstate. Hello to you, and how do you do? Why is she wearing... I'll wait till she comes back.
No, I saw.
Why is she wearing the same pants as the genie from Aladdin?
Dude, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out if I like it or not, you know, but it does make her stand out. I mean,
not incorrect.
If she was here, I would think she ran out of laundry, like me. I've got to have to break down and hit a laundromat eventually.
I guess, man, you're taking cold showers. Just bring your clothes in the shower with you, man. Just wear the next day's clothes in the shower and then hang them up to dry. You know, we're like living in the colonial era.
It probably would be less cold if I was wearing clothes in the shower.
You got to have a river somewhere near you, right?
Well, we got a creek, but yeah, I ain't going down.
Just go hop in the creek. Bring the clothes down, hop in the creek.
Would you come over and help me? Because I don't know how to do it. Maybe you can show me the proper methods to wash clothes in the creek.
Jump in, spin in a few circles. Seems like that's easy enough.
Sounds like you've done it before. Okay.
I mean, I've been camping. Okay. You know?
Is that how you really wash your clothes when you camp? I don't think you wash clothes when you're camping.
No, I've never washed my clothes in a creek.
Yeah, you just like wear the same clothes.
If I go
like
camping, I just bring enough clothes.
Okay. Well,
that's it.
I went and bought some more clothes, so I'm good, but I think I'm out as of Friday. So
oh, man. All right, we got a lot to get to on the show today. If you want to be a part of it, 844-326-3663 is the number, 844-FANFONE. The Renewal by Anderson to the Carolinas text line is open for you, 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, FAN, F-A-N. We'll read them on the air. You can also tweet me at the Rob Brown Show. You can tweet Lonzo at Lonzo on Word. And you can get at all of us at the Fan Upstate. You can also on the Audacy app, AUDACY, put it on all of your digital devices. Go to the Fan Upstate page. In the middle of the page, there is a little microphone button. You click on that microphone button and you can leave a 60-second voice note that will come directly to Lonzo and I. Go to the Audacy app, go to the Fan Upstate page, click on the microphone button, and leave us a 60-second voice note that we can read play right here on the show. Different ways for you to get engaged and involved. Now, it is 7:03 in the morning. You have just over 56 minutes until you got to get to the office and get to work, all right? And if you got to go in today, if you know you got to go in today, well, you need to know what's going on in the world of sports. And if you need to know what's going on in the world of sports, well, my dear, dear friends, do I have spectacular news for you? Lonzo and I are here to help with this. It is the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top three sports stories you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports this AM. When you do, this is what you'll be talking about. Let's dive right in with item number one. Playoff baseball wild card series got underway yesterday. 4 games, 2 in the AL, 2 in the NL. We started with our AL contest yesterday afternoon. And while I am not quite ready to say ding dong, the witch is dead, the Houston Astros are one step closer to their demise in the 2024 season after the Detroit Tigers take game one. 3-1 was your final. Tarek Skubal was electrifying. Six innings, just four hits surrendered. K'd six before the Tigers turned it over to the bullpen. The Tigers also knocked seven hits and three earned runs off of Framber Valdez. The Astros also had to run through five different pitchers to get through the back end of that game. Offensively, 10 combined hits for Detroit yesterday. No home runs in this game for that team. They did not need them. They were able to get up in this game early. They put three up in the top of the second, and then it was just small ball and defense the rest of the ride. The Tigers get win number one in the American League. Game two in the American League, the Royals on the road at the Baltimore Orioles, and the Monarchy up 1-0. On the Birds after one at Camden Yard. The Kansas City Royals went with Carl Reagans last night. Six innings, four hits, eight strikeouts, no earned runs. Corbin Burnes was electric yesterday. Corbin Burnes deserved better than getting tagged with the L yesterday. Eight innings, five hits, one earned run. But that one earned run was the run that won the game for the Kansas City Royals, and KC up on Baltimore 1-0. Then we switched over to the National League, and the Magic City Mets got it done in game number one, a come-from-behind victory again, this time over the Milwaukee Brewers. The Brew Crew went up a pair in inning one. The Mets answered with three. In the bottom of the fourth, Milwaukee got another two. The Mets in the top of the fifth answered with a five spot of their own and blanked Milwaukee the rest of the ride. Luis Severino, six innings, eight hits, three earned runs, four runs overall, K'd three. Freddy Peralta got chased off the bump after four innings, gave up two hits and three earned runs, K'd five, but they decided they needed to make the move early, did the Milwaukee Brewers. And once they did, when Pamps came into the game, he got absolutely shellacked by the Mets in this one. They round the bases, 8-4 winners are New York. All three of our games so far saw the road dog with the W. Game four, the lone exception. Padres 4, Bravos nothing. A.J. Smith-Shawver got the start for Atlanta, made it just 1.1 innings, gave up four hits, three earned runs before giving way to Aaron Bummer, Jesse Chavez, and Luke Jackson. Jackson would give up another run late in the contest that put the Padres up four, and again, never looked back. San Diego put up a couple in the first with a moonshot by Fernando Tatis Jr. The Braves couldn't get anything going last night. Seven hits for Atlanta. None of them were consequential at all. The Braves had runners in scoring position five different times. They went 0-for-5 with runners in scoring position. Darno was 0-for-1. Ozuna was 0-for-1. Soler was 0-for-1. Urshela was 0-for-1. And Olsen was 0-for-1. Look, I don't have to tell you. I told you coming into these playoffs, if the Atlanta Braves wanted any chance to make any noise, it was going to have to be because they carried momentum into the postseason, A, and it was going to have to be riding the arms. It was going to have to be pitchers. Well, because of the way the postseason set up, they don't have it. They don't have it. It's unfortunate, but it's true. They just don't have it right now. If you're throwing A.J. Smith-Shawver out there in game one, you don't have Chris Sale due to the back spasms outside. I don't know what to say. You got Max Fried going tonight, which is great. Max Fried's about as good as you can ask for. The problem is he's going up against Joe Musgrove, who's gotten better as the season progressed. To me, Atlanta's got the pitching matchup, but not like, oh, I'm going to go run and bet the farm on Atlanta to get game two because of Max Fried over Musgrove. And as Zach just said in the Facebook stream a minute ago, The Padres have everything going. They are slapping the ball. They are throwing the ball. They are electric on the base pass. The Padres were the best team of the last month, not just in the National League. Honestly, I think in all of baseball, the Padres were the best team entering this postseason. And the Braves, by not winning the first game in the doubleheader on Monday, are going to pay for it because they're getting swept tonight. Let's go to item number two. A player demanding a trade ordinarily would not make it to the water cooler cheat sheet unless that player was A, something special, or B, directly connected to a team that we are directly connected to. Devontae Adams is both. The Las Vegas Raiders have informed the rest of the NFL that they are considering trading the three-time All-Pro Bowler Devontae Adams for a package that would include a second-round draft pick and additional compensation, according to Adam Schefter. Adams was acquired by the Raiders in a trade with the Packers for a first and second-round draft pick back in 2022. Missed his first game as a member of the Raiders on Sunday with a hamstring injury. The Raiders would go on to win against the Browns 20-16. Earlier Tuesday, Adams appeared on the Up and Adams show with Kay Adams, was asked about Raiders coach Antonio Pierce's verified Instagram account, liking a post from Sports Illustrated, wondering whether Adams had played his final game with the Raiders. Devontae responded saying, quote, "I haven't heard from him. I haven't talked to him. Social media is a beast, so it's a lot of people out there who saw it and wondering what's going on and reaching out." Told by Kay Adams that a lot of people think he has played his last down with the Raiders, Devontae said, quote, "All I can control is this talk we're having, right? And after we're done with this, all I can control is the next thing that I'm on to," end quote. Now, I don't really care what it does with the Raiders, all right? They are of no concern to me. There are two impacts here that I think are worth talking about on this show. Number one, there's a 0.0000% chance Lonzo's Kansas City Chiefs aren't at the head of the line. 0% chance they're not the first. If they're not on the phone with the Raiders already, I'll be shocked.
Not happening. They're not going to trade him to a rival in their own division.
Trade who? The Raiders weren't?
Yeah, they won't. He's going to the Jets. I mean, that's where he wants to go. That's where he's going to go. I mean, it was rumored before the season even started. That's where he wants to go. He's not going to go to the Chiefs. They're not going to trade him to the Chiefs.
I do agree that the Raiders are the most likely trade target or the team he's been. Here's the thing. The Jets. Here's the thing. This isn't up to Devontae, right? Like, this isn't up to Devontae.
You're right. It's not. And that's the thing. Why would you trade this guy to the team that's already dominating you? It just, they're not going to trade in division. They're just not going to.
It would 100% be, what are the Chiefs willing to put on the table, right? If the Chiefs call up and they go, hey, we'll give you your first, we'll give you your second, and we'll give you an extra second, and nobody else is willing to do that at that point, take it.
Not going to happen. Not going to happen.
What are the odds that this year or next the Raiders are ready to compete with the Kansas City Chiefs for a divisional title? 0.1%.
They have a taste of what it's like to beat Kansas City. They destroyed them last year on Christmas. So it isn't like it's impossible for them to win. The fact that they're not willing to hang on to Adams, it means that he's disgruntled and he wants to go somewhere else, and that apparently works everywhere except for in the real world. But they're not going to trade him to the Chiefs. They're just not.
I have seen in-division trades happen all the time. Here's what it takes.
We're talking about the Raiders here.
Here's what it takes. It takes the other team, the trade partner in division, being willing to overpay. And I will tell you right now, you disagree with this, and that's fine. We'll see what happens. If I'm the Chiefs, I'll overpay for Devontae Adams. If I'm the Chiefs, I will overpay to go get Patty Mahomes a bona fide one.
If they're going to go and get a receiver of that caliber, they'll find a way to get Tyreek Hill back. They're not, I mean, because he knows the system and everything, and they won't have to do that much of getting him up to speed. Tyreek Hill could come in and play right now and know probably almost all the plays.
See, the problem you have here is Tyreek ain't on the block right now.
Not yet.
He's not on the block.
Not yet.
He's not going to be on the block.
We'll see.
They're not going to blow it up because Tua's out.
Adams is not going to go to Kansas City. It's just not going to happen.
I mean, listen, I all of the things that you are saying are genuinely good arguments why it won't happen. I also know it has happened before. I also know that there have been divisional trades for players the caliber of Davante Adams. It's just a matter of, do the Chiefs feel like getting to the three-peat is worth overpaying the market value for Devontae? And all I can say, and this is just where we have to leave it because it is just subjective in opinion now. To me, if I'm the Chiefs, I'd absolutely overpay for Davante Adams. There is not a Davante Adams on the roster in Kansas City. I don't care how good you think Xavier Worthy is. I don't care if you're of the Zoe mentality that, oh, just somebody's going to show up with a cape and their underoos on the outside. There is no Davante Adams in Kansas City.
When does talent outplay or overshadow attitude? Because he hasn't been happy wherever he's been. So why you bring that guy in when he hasn't been happy wherever he's been?
He hasn't. He was happy in Green Bay until Aaron Rodgers left. And again, most of us feel that regardless of how you feel about Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers got screwed by the pack. We all agree on that. Even people who don't like Aaron Rodgers agree. Aaron Rodgers got screwed by the Packers, and it ticked off Devontae, which is why he went it out. Then he goes to Kansas. What Kansas do? They got Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell to throw the ball.
He didn't go to Kansas.
I mean, Las Vegas.
Yeah,
he goes to Vegas, and he's got Gardner Minshew. And all due respect to Gardner Minshew, you know I'm a big Gardner Minshew guy. I 100% want to travel the world in the back of a van with Gardner Minshew. It sounds like it'd be awesome. He's got Gardner Minshew, and he's got Aiden O'Connell throwing him the football. They did not set themselves up to be better this year than last year. And Devontae's ticked off about it, and I think it is absolutely justified. This belief that if you're unhappy with your work environment, you're a toxic guy with an attitude, I could not disagree with it more. Sometimes you work in a crappy work environment, and I they're the Raiders. Like, I don't have an issue with Devontae being done with what's happening in the LV right now.
There are other, to me, more realistic places where he could land. Buffalo is one. The Jets is where he's going. That's just, I mean, the Jets want him. They're willing to probably give what he's being asked for and more.
Listen, just so we're clear, I am not disagreeing with that at all. Like, not in the least. I am saying there are other destinations out there. And by the way, my team's one of those as well, as Joey B pointed out. He was happy in Vegas for 1 year in 2022 when Derek Carr was there, a guy he had a relationship with. He went to Vegas to play with Derek Carr. And then they let Derek Carr walk. And that's when all of this started, right? So there's the potential if he really wants to play with Derek Carr again, my team's on the table. Now, I don't think we're given a first and a second for him. I think we could be talked out of like a first and a fourth. I don't know if that's going to be enough. All right, very, very quickly, item number three. Sorry, I'll just say it. Southeastern Conference, Big Ten, athletic directors, all meeting in Nashville, Tennessee this week. Two things on the table. Number one, as we talked about yesterday, we'll get more into this later in the show. They are putting together a plan to go after the College Football Playoff Selection Committee and demand of the CFP selection committee that those two conferences be given four automatic qualification berths to the playoffs every year. But there's another thing that they're going to discuss today. The other thing they're going to discuss, a scheduling partnership between the two conferences that would see SEC and Big Ten teams eating up each other's non-conference schedule moving forward. Why? Keep the money in the house. Real simple. But we'll talk about the impact of that on the college football game later on the Rob Brown Show with the Fan Upstate.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
Atlanta Braves drop a game 4-0 last night. That's how they open the wild card round of the Major League Baseball postseason. Now in a 1-0 hole, it is a best of three series to open it up, which means if the Bravos eat L number two today, it also ends their season. They will be going with Max Fried off the bump tonight. At this point, you pull out every stop, you pull every card out of the sleeve, every rabbit out of every hat to figure out how to do it. It is just survival at this point. And as I've said a couple of times, I'm not even allowing myself to have like the briefest glimpses of hope. There's no point of it to me. This team is just, it's just not ready. It's just not there. I'd like it to be, but it's just not there. You have a chance anytime that Max Fried goes to the bump. And Max Fried being Max Fried, a guy who is going to be arguably the most highly paid free agent this upcoming offseason when he inevitably ends up becoming a Los Angeles Dodgers, because the rule is the Dodgers are just allowed to have whoever they want. That's just how baseball that is now.
Isn't that, didn't that used to be the Yankees? When did that change?
Oh, it's them too.
Okay.
It's them too. It's effectively anytime a top-notch free agent becomes available, it's do the Dodgers want him or do the Yankees want him? And if neither team does, then the rest of you peons may have the opportunity to sign this guy. So Max Fried is going to be a free agent. He's going to be a Dodger next year. This very likely could be his final game as an Atlanta Brave. We'll find out. Maybe AA pulls something wizard out of his hat, and we end up seeing Max Fried stick around. I am not banking on it. Anytime you got Max Fried on the bump, you got a chance. But again, last night, Atlanta found themselves out of the gate. I'm talking inning number one. Two on, one out. Opportunity to make something happen. K fly out. Atlanta had plenty of base runners last night. 10 hits, couple of walks late in the game. Plenty of opportunities for Atlanta last night, and there's just no clutch gene, man. There's just no clutch gene. There's just nothing in them that makes you look and go, I trust them in intense situations. Because right now I don't. Somebody said yesterday on social media, they said, actually, Ryan Horvath said when I was on BetMGM tonight, he was like, I think I might put a Braves to win the World Series ticket down because this team reminds me a lot of the 2021 team. Remember 2021, no Ronald Acuna Jr. that season. He had the bum wheel just like he does this year. But there was grit to that team. There was some level of determination to that team that I don't see out of this team. I just don't see out of this team. This team refuses to make changes. This team does not adapt. This team doesn't change it up from the plate or at the plate. There's nothing about this team, I'm sorry, that's inspiring. Every game in the second half of the season, there were plenty of times. Again, I talked about it a little bit yesterday. There was a run after the All-Star break where the Phillies came out ice cold. There was a spot after the All-Star break where the Phillies genuinely opened the door for the Braves. And Atlanta just, like, grabbed the doorknob and slammed their own junk in the doorframe. There's just no clutch to this team at all. You've got a team that has, I looked this stat up last night, and I think I've got it correct. This team has one player inside the top 45 in OPS in Major League Baseball this year. Inside the top 45. One player offensively inside the top 45. Now, we do have to point out, and I think it is fair to say, the number of injuries for Atlanta this year are staggering. Not only are you missing Spencer Strider off your rotation, who would have been a difference maker. Not only are you missing last year's National League most valuable player, Ronald Acuña Jr., but throughout this the regular season, just about everybody who wasn't Marcell Ozuna and Matt Olson missed extended time on the IL. And it's not so much that, oh, we have a 2 or 3 week stint without Sean Murphy or a 2 or 3 week stint. By the way, Austin Riley is done for the year as well. That's a major piece of your offense. Not only do you lose all of those cats, but it also changes everything about your team, right? It changes the team chemistry. It changes the locker room. It changes the lineup. It changes who's batting where and when and how. It changes everything. And when it changes everything, and then that guy comes back, then you got to try to change it all back. And it doesn't go well. So I commend the Atlanta Braves for making it to the postseason. I commend the boys for getting here. I think there is some level of, if this matters to you at all, I think there is some level of moral victory for Atlanta in reaching this spot, reaching the postseason, when all things said they should not have. But they're just not that good. That's it. And I do want to add one more thing to it before I get to my ifs, ands, and buts here. The Atlanta Braves screwed the Atlanta Braves. Bret Hart screwed Bret Hart. The Atlanta Braves screwed the Atlanta Braves. Last week, the Atlanta Braves should have moved that doubleheader up against the Mets. They didn't do that. Why didn't they do that? It depends on who you ask. If you ask the Braves, what the Braves said was, well, we had a hurricane coming. We didn't want to be the reason that anybody that may have needed to delay getting out of town did so. We didn't want anybody hanging around Atlanta, getting in trouble with the storm, and then going, the only reason I stayed is because I already had tickets to the Braves game. The reality is, it's because they sold 65,000 tickets to game one against the Mets because of how important that series against the Mets was, and they didn't want to lose the gate for game two and game three. So instead of playing the doubleheader like they absolutely should have the next day, starting the doubleheader at 10 o'clock in the morning and getting them both done by 3 or 4 in the afternoon, instead of doing what they should have done, playing that series as a doubleheader the next day and finishing it so that these teams could go finish their last series, Braves at the Royals, Mets in the, who was it, Brewers. Go finish those series, and then let's see where the playoff seeding is. But they didn't do that. They wanted the gate revenue. And I get it. Baseball's money, right? I'm not disillusioned. The problem is, it also meant all your pitchers had to throw on Monday, and then the wild card round starts on Tuesday. Oh, and by the way, those games on Monday, they mattered. Those games on Monday, they meant something. Those games on Monday determine, are you going to Milwaukee, are you going to San Diego, or are you going the hell home? Which means you couldn't rest. You couldn't hang back. You add on to that the Chris Sale thing, and it was just it's a recipe for disaster. That's all it is. I don't like it. It's ugly. the Braves screwed themselves as far as we'd rather have the gate than have the best possible setup for us to potentially go win the wild card round on the road. But as far as the team goes, it's just not good enough, man. It's just not. Blame it on the injuries. Blame it on Brian Snicker. Blame it on the rain that was falling. You can blame it on whatever you want to blame it on. The end of the day, you got one guy inside the top 45 offensive players. You got a pitching staff that is already banged up and now taxed because of the way the season wrapped up. And I got a manager who looks like he's asleep most of the time. It kind of is what it is. I was texting Joey B last night during the game. I'm like, I hope we get blown out in game one. I hope we lose game one 25-0. I hope it's embarrassing so that I can just go to bed the next two nights and not worry about it. When we come back, athletic directors from the SEC and the Big Ten are getting together in Nashville, Tennessee this week to talk about some stuff that I've told you already was an inevitability. We'll talk more about it when we come back on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show continues. It's the Fan Upstate. Rob, the great Milonzo with you. On a Wednesday morning, the midweek edition rolls on. Let's continue. We talked about this a little bit earlier in the show, and I got a couple text messages about it. From different spots, but I want to bring it back up. I think, Lonzo, and you know, I know that we've said this about games in the past. I mean, it's true of every football team. You know, the most important game is the next one. But I do think
we're moving on to Cincinnati.
God, that was so good. I do think that there are spots where a game has increased importance, increased significance. And I do think that there are some that have such increased importance and such increased significance that it is fair to say this is the most important game of whatever time period. This is the most important game of the week. This is the most important game of the season. This is the most important game of the year. This is the most important game of the decade. This is the most important game of this coach's tenure, this quarterback's tenure, whatever. Lonzo, this Saturday is the most important game of Shane Beamer's career. And I'll tell you why. After the Kentucky win, after the dog fight against LSU, where I do think that most of us do believe that a little home cooking, well, I guess away cooking, it's not as good of a phrase, a little extra yellow hanky action helped LSU escape Columbia, South Carolina. After the Kentucky game, after the LSU game, I think there's some folks looking at this Gamecock football program and saying, maybe there's something happening here, right? Maybe there's a little something happening here. It wasn't just that you beat Kentucky. It's that you beat Kentucky. And then, oh, by the way, Kentucky the next week goes out, gives Georgia everything that they want and a little something more, goes out the next week and beats a top five Ole Miss team. Now, I did spend the offseason telling all of you that I think Ole Miss was overrated. As much as I love Lane Kiffin, the content generator, I thought they're an overrated football team. Still a great win for the Kentucky Wildcats. Right. So the Gamecocks got a little something cooking in the eyes of the college football landscape. Here's the thing. You get beat by Ole Miss, and I don't mean lose. I mean you get beat by Ole Miss if they are clearly far and away the better football team on Saturday. It floats off in the wind. If you get beat on Saturday, that's all gone. if you win on Saturday, and you can win ugly, you can win pretty, you can win by a little, you can win by a lot. Take advantage of the narrative that Ole Miss is a good team that had a bad game against an underappreciated Kentucky team. It's a bad narrative. They're an okay team that had a bad day against an okay team. That's it. In my opinion, nothing more, nothing less. But the narrative here sets up very well for South Carolina. The narrative here is now written in a way that you have an enormous opportunity to take advantage of. Shane Beamer and the Gamecocks come out and win this game. All of the sudden, I think everybody starts to look at this program and go, oh, they really do got a little something going down there. I think you come out and you win this football game, and all of a sudden people look and they go, that Kentucky game wasn't a fluke. That LSU game was legitimate. This team has found a little something. You've got a healthy Rocket Sanders after the bye week. You've got a healthy Lenora Sellers after the bye week. You had a week to dial in and focus on the game plan for Ole Miss. I will simply say this. Win against Ole Miss, everything changes. Lose against Ole Miss, and it's close, and whatever. Don't be competitive in this game. When you had the bye week and they did not, when you had the extra time to get healthy and get right and they did not, when you had the extra week to be dialed in on exactly what you need to do to beat Jackson Dart and the Ole Miss Running Rebels, and they did not, do not come out and every bit of positive thought, emotion, everything that you guys have accomplished to impress people so far this season goes right out the window, in my opinion.
Well, they've already exceeded expectations from a lot of people as far as how good they look. Now they've got to win a big one, and that's what this Saturday would be. What are the odds out? I'm curious. I'm guessing that South Carolina is not picked to win. But sure. But I wonder, that would be one.
Yes,
I wonder.
Now I'm going to sniffle into the mic the rest of the show, just so you know. You're all going to have to deal with it because Alonzo.
Yeah, I don't care. It doesn't bother me. I can handle sniffles all day as long as you don't do that breath thing.
Oh, I don't have my clipboard.
And I don't have it turned up anyway, wouldn't have got me. Yeah, I'm just curious about what the odds are.
South Carolina is +9.5. You got to cover that. I will also point out, Vegas has been giving Ole Miss credit all year. And I'm actually going to play something I was hanging on to for later. But I'll do it here. Let's see. This is, was it Cannell? I'm not a big Cannell guy. I think Cannell's a hot take artist. And I think it's kind of weak. I think Danny Cannell's a hot take artist. I do think he got this one about Ole Miss quite right.
Congrats to Mark Stoops.
Yep. So that's what I get for trying to edit audio during the show for you people. Keep Furman's name out your mouth.
So is it a thing? Well, wow, you let Kentucky do that? When Kentucky got beat by South Carolina, they come out and they're a different Kentucky right now. So, I mean, them losing to Kentucky, I don't think is as big of a deal as it would have been in the past. Kentucky is a lot better than what people think.
I disagree. I don't think they are. I don't think they are. I don't think Kentucky's that good. I think Kentucky's okay. I put them, as I do with most, as there's two tiers of SEC ball. There's Georgia. I'll say there's three. There's Georgia. There's Alabama. There's a drop. There's LSU. You know what? I'm going to go Georgia, Alabama, Texas, Tennessee. I'm going to go LSU.
I'm glad you decided to put Texas in there.
Yeah, I keep forgetting about Texas.
They're like the number one team in the nation.
No, they're not. Alabama is.
Oh, I'm sorry. They were last week.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I think there's Alabama, Texas, Georgia. There's Tennessee, LSU, and then there's just everybody else. And Kentucky's very much in the everybody else category. I think after the game against Georgia, people wanted to elevate them up into the upper echelon. Wanted to elevate. Oh, look at Kentucky. Oh, they've arrived. I don't think they have. I think they're fine. I think they're okay, right? I'm not overall impressed, which is why, to me, Ole Miss doesn't come out of that game and get credit for, oh, you know, that's a tough place, Lexington, Kentucky, against the good There's a reason that they're Kentucky. And South Carolina won in there and slapped them in the mouth 31-6, right? And so now, again, transitive property of football is very dangerous. The expectation for South Carolina, and there are, and maybe this is really the kind of the point of all of this. South Carolina has an expectation this weekend now. At least to me, they do.
And you know what? I don't want to see anyone get injured, but Lenore Sellers going down was not entirely a bad thing because the backup quarterback got reps and looked really good. So I'm looking forward to this weekend.
I am too. And I think it is because, like I said, I think it's because I have expectations now, right? My expectations for South Carolina coming into the season were what? Make a bowl game. Now I have game by game expectations. And I said preseason. Like I can find you four. Now I got to have you get two I don't expect. And Ole Miss was very much on that list that I went, this is one that's very squarely in the maybe category. I'm not saying that I expect a win for Ole Miss. I'm saying, for South Carolina. I'm saying the game is winnable. And if you, Shane Beamer, if you want me to believe that you really, truly, genuinely have turned a corner with this football program, as you have said you have done a number of times this season, then what I need you to do is I don't want to say I need you to win, but what I need you to do is stop getting close and then saying that's good enough, right? Go win the game. Go win the game. Because you now have expectations, especially with Ole Miss losing to Kentucky. Now you're a team that you smoked, by the way, on the same field just a couple of weeks later. And oh, by the way, this Ole Miss team, as Danny Cannell pointed out, yeah, they dropped a bunch of 70s and 60s against Furman. Quick, name me another team Ole Miss played. Right, exactly. So, to me, respect is on the table for the Gamecocks this weekend. You can go win this game at home, and I think everybody's going to look at Columbia and go, oh, they're for real. Oh, this is not a joke. They have taken a step forward. That's not to say you're finishing the season with a bunch more wins. Look, you got Alabama. But I'll say this. After what I saw out of Oklahoma against Auburn this weekend, Lonzo, if you can beat Ole Miss, you can beat Oklahoma. I firmly believe that. If you can beat Ole Miss and you can beat Oklahoma, you can beat Texas A&M. I firmly believe that. If you win this game, if you win this game, great one. I'm going to say for the remainder of the schedule, there's one more game that I would say you cannot win. That's Alabama. But if you can beat Kentucky, if you can beat Ole Miss, well, if you can beat Kentucky, you can beat Ole Miss. If you can beat Ole Miss, you can beat Oklahoma. If you can beat Oklahoma, you can beat Texas A&M. If you can beat any of those teams, you can beat Missouri. And then it comes down to Alabama and Clemson. Make a statement. This is a statement weekend. The thing is, most of the time when we say this is a statement weekend, we mean for the season we're talking about, right? This is a statement weekend for 20. No. This is a statement weekend for Shane Beamer's tenure. This is a statement weekend for Shane Beamer, the coach. You go out and you win this game, you beat Joey Freshwater, you do it at the house, and I think a statement has been made about the Gamecocks of South Carolina. Don't talk about it no more. Be about it. You know who would be about it? He'd be about this. No. Lonzo's going to wow you now, Sports Flash Time. I'm bad at this, all of it.
He's trying really hard, people. He really is. The Atlanta Braves dropped Game 1 in the wild card round series against the San Diego Padres last night, 4-0. Fernando Tatis opened the scoring for the Padres with a two-round blast in the first inning, while Padres pitcher Michael King dominated Atlanta, throwing seven scoreless innings, striking out 12 with no walks issued. Atlanta tries to take Game 2 tonight at 8:30. Florida State University will not play former Clemson quarterback DJ Uiagalelei against his old Tigers team this weekend. The Seminoles say DJU suffered a broken finger last week in a loss against SMU and will be replaced as QB1 by freshman Brock Lynn, who makes his first start. Make sure you tune in this Saturday at 12:30 as the Furman Paladins take on the Citadel Bulldogs. It's Furman versus Citadel right here on your home for Paladins football, The Fan, Upstate.